I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events, major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories, the unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Darkness and terror fall across the podcast today as we dive into the bloody tale of vampire bacteria.
I know. I don't often think of medical research as particularly spooky, but a recent study about these organisms was enough to make me shiver. And yes, listeners, that's what scientists are really calling them. Just listen here to lead author Dr. Arden Baylink of Washington State University.
You roll your eyes when you hear the phrase vampire bacteria, or is it accurate?
I would say it's accurate. It's maybe a little bit sensational, but the reason that we titled our study or introduced this term of bacterial vampirism is that, you know, we made this discovery that the bacteria swim towards blood and they eat it. And we just thought that, you know, that this was just a really fascinating behavior that people hadn't seen before.
Now, that's just a snippet of my recent talk with Dr. Baylink about the study findings.
After headlines started coming out about the discovery, we knew we had to reach out to him. What's more offbeat than tiny little vampires hiding in your body?
It is unusual, that's for sure. Although there is a benefit. You're not going to wind up with bite marks on your neck since they're already in your blood.
That's true, but for some reason that makes it even creepier to me. And I should warn listeners that we're going to be talking a lot about blood in this episode, as well as other topics that might gross you out, like food poisoning.
Uh-oh, that could be a problem. That is one of our producers, Lauren. I'm your host, Mike Rogers, and this is Something Offbeat. I was glancing at this article again a moment ago, and, you know, something like this grabs your attention. Vampire bacteria. This is interesting. A little background here. What are we talking about?
Yeah, so this is actually involves bacteria that a lot of people have probably heard about. So this includes things like E. coli and Salmonella. And we also studied some bacteria that maybe people wouldn't normally hear about, and that includes things like Enterobacter and Citrobacter. But the key finding in this study was that these bacteria seem to be attracted to human blood. And what we found was that these bacteria essentially have a really good sense of smell. So they have this behavior that they do called chemotaxis. So when they're swimming around, they're sort of sniffing their environment, and a main thing that they're doing is they're looking for food. And so in this study, we found that these types of bacteria are actually drawn and attracted towards sources of human blood through chemotaxis.
And just a quick note here, chemotaxis is a mechanism that allows bacteria to quickly find environments that are best for them and to avoid unfavorable ones.
And the kind of family that all of these bacteria are a part of is this big group of bacteria called Enterobacteriaceae. And these are a family of bacteria that are associated with many types of gastrointestinal illnesses. So these are bacteria that, you know, that can infect your intestines and cause disease.
So these are like sharks, just a trace of blood in the water and they can smell it.
They're even more sensitive than sharks, actually. But yes.
What is the normal target for bacteria? It's not always blood, is it?
Right. Yeah. So this chemotaxis system that I mentioned that they have, so they use that to find food. You know, that's the basic function at a molecular level. That's what they're trying to do. They're just hungry. They're trying to survive. And this is a way that they can detect food in their environment and swim towards it.
Why do they go after blood, though? Is this just, does it benefit them somehow?
Yeah, so that's what we looked into. So it turns out that blood human blood actually contains a lot of really good food for bacteria. And that actually kind of makes sense. So blood is the main source of food for our body and our cells. So blood, you know, as it circulates around, it takes around glucose and amino acids. Well, these are all things that are also excellent food for bacteria. And so when we looked into this deeper, what we found is that there's a specific type of amino acid in human blood called serine. And if you were to look at the you know, ingredient label of your favorite protein drink or something like that, you would see, for instance, that serine is a component of that. It's something we eat as food. But bacteria love serine. It's one of their favorite nutrients. And so it turns out that human blood has a high amount of serine into it, and that's what these bacteria are sensing. So they have a special protein receptor specifically designed to be able to sense serine, and that's why they swim towards sources of human blood.
Mike, you sounded as cool as a cucumber while talking about all this blood. So I'm guessing you're not one of the 3-4% of people who have blood injury injection phobia. That's the condition that causes some people to faint when they see blood, like Bella in Twilight, for all my Twilight fans.
First of all, thank you for that millennial reference there. Second, I didn't know that it had a name, blood injury infection phobia. There was actually a condition. And the third thing is, you couldn't be more wrong about me, because I am absolutely terrified of blood. Well, I'm not terrified of my own blood. I can take a knife and just lay myself open and watch the blood pour out, and that's no problem. I'll just sit there and look at it. It's not a problem. But if someone else gets a nosebleed, I'm on the floor. This is why I would never have made a good doctor.
I kind of agree with you. The sight of my own blood doesn't bother me. I just told a story on another episode about bleeding all over my customers. Not all my customers, but all over a table.
I remember that. Yeah, that was good.
Yes. But yeah, the sight of other people's blood, definitely, I wouldn't faint at it, but it grosses me out more than my own. And I have this thing where when I hear people talking about blood, or if I read about it, I get kind of itchy. It's worse than actually seeing it for me to hear about it. And I think I have to think about how I'm filled with blood. It just creeps me out.
Itchy.
Like, because I'm thinking about all the blood in my body.
That is an unusual. We're going to have to get Dr. House in for a consult and come up with a diagnosis, because that's weird.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events: major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories, the unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
The bacteria in question, are these good bacteria or bad bacteria?
Well, it's a combination. So some of these bacteria are what we call pathogens. So these are just bacteria that, you know, you can think of them as always bad. They're always out to get you. But there are also some that we refer to as opportunistic pathogens. And that means that oftentimes in a healthy person, they don't cause disease. They're not a problem. But under certain situations, such as people that have maybe like a compromised immune system or some kind of underlying disease, in that situation, these bacteria can become pathogenic.
Is there any way to get rid of the bad and leave the good?
That's a big picture question, and that's definitely something that my laboratory is pursuing. You know, one of the outcomes of this study is that we were able to learn more about these bacteria and how they might be involved in bloodstream infections. And so now that we understand this mechanism, some of our next steps are going to be to try to develop therapeutics that block this ability. And if we're able to do that, then that could be a new way that we're able to treat and prevent bloodstream infections.
What's the worst case scenario if we can't?
So I'd say that's kind of the current scenario. So the patient population that is really at high risk for bloodstream infections are people with inflammatory bowel diseases or IBD. And so this includes people that have Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis. And chances are you probably know someone with IBD. It's about 1% of the population. Now, a hallmark part of this disease of IBD is that people have bleeding lesions in their intestines. And so that can be entry points for these bacteria that are otherwise, you know, kind of in the middle part of the intestine to be able to enter into the bloodstream. And it turns out that these bacteria that we've been studying actually are the major cause of death for IBD patients from bloodstream infections. And so, you know, most people, if they were infected with this bacteria, they tend to, you know, get over that infection. It's not a big deal. But again, this high-risk population of IBD patients, you know, they're really who we're thinking about in terms of this research and trying to find new therapeutics.
You know, it's funny, the second you mentioned colitis and IBD, my first thought was, would you get internal bleeding with those diseases? Yeah. Well, that's just like setting out the buffet for these bacteria.
Yeah, so certainly. And so that was one of our big motivators for doing this study at all, was because we knew ahead of time that patients with IBD are at high risk for bloodstream infections, but not from all bacteria. And that was interesting to us. So it was only these Enterobacteriaceae bacteria, you know, again, that's E. coli, Salmonella, that are the major causes of death. And so our question was, well, why? why not other bacteria? And so that led us down this, you know, this sort of line of questions to try to understand why these specific bacteria are so prone to bloodstream infections. And, you know, the result is, we think that one thing at play here is that they have this built-in navigation system that helps them swim towards sources of blood.
What got you interested in this problem?
So this has been an area that I've been interested in for a long time. You know, I started out with my doctoral training thinking about the proteins that help pathogens be able to survive and you know, learned a bit about drug discovery. And the next stage of my training was actually, you know, studying bacterial pathogens. And so now here at Washington State, you know, really I'm trying to connect those dots and try to take, you know, new insights about drug discovery and insights about bacterial pathogens and combine those into things that can really be helpful for, you know, patients that need better medicines.
I wish I had you around. My daughter was dealing with a bacterial infection earlier this month.
So you mentioned that your daughter was dealing with a bacterial infection. I hope she's better.
Yes, she is. And thank you for asking. She is actually, both my daughters are now living in New Zealand, if you can believe that. And down there, they call it, what she had, they call it glandular fever. Up here, we call it mono. That's what she had. Yeah. And it's absolutely no fun. But she's getting over it. She's getting a little bit better. So.
Well, I am lucky. I've never had mono. I've had some friends with that. And I definitely am sending your daughter like all the best get better vibes, because I know it sucks. I have had to deal with food poisoning, and I have, this is, you know, you can judge me if you want. I have stupidly gotten food poisoning at the same restaurant about 3 times.
What?
And if you're wondering if I went there again after the 3 times, yes, I did. It's like a really popular restaurant in my area and people always have parties there. So I'd be like, I don't want to go, but you know, I probably won't get food poisoning this time. I want to go to the party.
Surely it can't happen a third time. And yet it did. What do they serve at this restaurant? This must be some good food.
It's okay. It's like family style Italian food. I don't want to like harp on them too much, because I did eventually stop going there. It's been a few years, probably more than 10 years. So hopefully they've gotten themselves together and they're not food poisoning people anymore.
So my most recent experience with that was actually just a few months ago. We were in Europe. We were in Portugal, and we went to a seafood restaurant, and for the rest of my life, the words grilled sea bass will make me queasy, because it was ugly. Oh, that was, man, a forgettable vacation.
I hope the first half of it was good. Well, as you can probably tell by Mike's story and my story, food poisoning and bacterial infections are pretty common. For example, 2 of the vampire bacteria examples Baylink mentioned. According to the CDC, E. coli causes an estimated 97,000 illnesses, 3,270 hospitalizations, and 30 deaths in the U.S. alone every year. Salmonella is even more common, with about 1.35 million infections per year, as well as 26,500 hospitalizations and around 420 deaths.
Are there any other organisms, anything else we might have in our bodies that act like this, that are attracted to blood?
There are other organisms definitely that eat blood, that consume blood. And people are probably aware of mosquitoes and ticks being a couple. Interestingly, there isn't as much research on these other types of bacteria, but there are certain types of bacteria that infect mosquitoes and ticks. And we think that they actually might also be some of these kind that are doing this behavior of bacterial vampirism and maybe attracted to and eat human blood. But we haven't looked into that specifically yet.
You've got other studies coming on this bacteria though, correct?
Yeah, certainly. So, you know, these types of bacteria are a major cause of human illnesses and death worldwide. And that's the focus of my laboratory, actually, is to develop new therapeutics against these types of bacteria.
What is the ultimate goal then? Are we talking about a possible cure, or am I getting ahead of myself there?
Well, I will emphasize that, you know, that we're really in the beginning stages of this research. We have a lot left to do to understand whether or not this bacterial vampirism behavior is actually going on in human patients. But long term, it is our goal to make new and better antibacterial medicines. And a big reason for that is that, you know, many of these bacteria are becoming harder and harder to treat. So, you know, the antibiotics that we've used in the past, a lot of these bacteria have grown resistant to them. And that's really a terrible scenario. You know, if you're an infected patient, to go into a hospital, need treatment and help, and we don't have a medicine that can help you. And so my lab is trying to be part of that solution and to make the next generation of these therapeutics that work better, more effectively, and can target these pathogens.
I'm Mike Rogers. Thanks so much for listening to another episode of Something Offbeats, written and produced by Lauren Berry and Chris Blake, audio editing by Chris Blake, and original music by Myron Kaplan. And to keep listening, subscribe to us on the Odyssey app or Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcasts. And listen, if you've got your own offbeat story that you think we should cover, tell us about it. You can send it to us at somethingoffbeat@Odyssey. That's AUDACY.com.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events, major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories, the unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.